Morning. Today's daf in Sota is Tes Vav. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is known as Zeichen Nishmat Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. When Yudal Mudbeis, we're discussing Menachos. Okay, we're cramming the Masechta into a daf of Gemara, a couple of dafim of Gemara. We need to know about the basics of Menachos, and the reason why is because the Sota brings a Mincha. And the Sota's Mincha is not exactly like the other Menachos. In fact, today's Gemara, we're going to see a Braisa where it's really different. It is totally unusual. There are other Menachos that are unusual as well, but nothing as unusual as the Mincha that's brought by Sota. So in order to understand the contrast, in order to really respect the contrast, we need to know a little bit about Menachos in general. Yesterday we saw a Braisa, where the Braisa taught us the very basics of a mincha. The Braisa, we're not going back, we're starting from where we left off yesterday, but if you look at the Braisa, if you look back at the Gemara, yesterday's daf, and Yudal Amud Beis, at the top of the Amud, three lines from the top, Seder Menachos Kate said, what exactly is the procedure of a mincha? And then, step by step, the Braisa holds our hand and walks us through the entire procedure of a mincha. So what we're doing now is we're going back to the Braisa and we're just reflecting on every point made in the Braisa. So we are going to pick it up where we left off yesterday. We had so far just to highlight some of the basic points that were made up until now from the Braisa. So you bring the mincha from your house. In other words, you bring the flour and the oil from your house, and you put it into a kli sharis, because by putting it into a kli sharis, now you're giving it kedushas aguf. Yesterday we talked about the difference between kedushas amin versus kedushas aguf. The biggest distinction is pidyon, is redemption. If it is kedushas damim, so then you can be poded. If it is kedushas aguf, then you can't be poded. So that's one point the Braisa made.
What's the emphasis from the house?
From the house, I mean, you could buy it in Yerushalayim, but in other words, the Braisa is talking about scenario where a person brought it on his own. So, Maybe the point of the Braisa is that we trust the person, that he is careful about tum and tahara. Okay, anyway, I don't know. And then the Braisa goes on to say, and then you add oil and lavona, and then you bring it to the Kohen, and the Kohen brings it to the Mizbeach, and brings it to the southwest corner of the Mizbeach. And we spoke yesterday why specifically about the southwest corner of the Mizbeach, because in doing so, you are complying with two psukim. One pasuk says it has to be facing the Beis HaMikdash, which is the west side of the Mizbeach. On the other pasuk says it has to be the Penei HaMizbeach, the face of the Mizbeach, the access point of the Mizbeach, which is the south. So how do I accomplish both? Easy, southwest. So the Gemara, we saw yesterday in the Gemara a dissenting viewpoint that it's only the south, but that's because that dissenting viewpoint has the Mizbeach located on the northern section of the Azara. So if it's in the northern section of the Azara, so you can be on the south side of the Mizbeach and both be Bnei Mizbeach and Lifnei Hashem. Okay, but that's fine. And then what do? We take the mincha and we take the bowl and we touch the bowl to the southwest corner, and the Gemara says Vidayo, and that's sufficient. And yesterday, the last thing we saw yesterday is what is exactly meant by the word vidayo. What is it meant by sufficient? The Gemara said yesterday that I might have thought that it's not enough for the bowl to touch the Mizbeach. I should think maybe the mincha itself should touch the Mizbeach. I guess the suggestion of the Gemara is to take the mincha out and have it actually touch the Mizbeach. But dayo, it's enough if the bowl touches the Mizbeach. It's close enough. Okay. This is what we did yesterday, and now we are moving on. We're moving ahead in the Braisa. And again, we're just going step by step through the Braisa. We are about 6-7 lines from the bottom of the Amud, at the two dots with the words of Masalkas, Lavonta, Letzad Echad. Letzad Echad. And you take the Lavon and you move it to one side, to which the Gemara comments, Ki Echad Dolo Tikmots Ba'adei Mincha, because the Kohen's about to do the Kemitza. He's about to take his hand, put it into the Mincha, and take a fistful of the Mincha, and that's the Kemitza. And the Gemara says, and what we don't want is we don't want the Lavona to be part of the Kemitza. We want the Kemitza to be only of flour and oil and nothing else. In fact, it did not. The Gemara quotes the Mishnah Menachos. Kamatz v'alabi adot soror gargar melech okor Lavona. If I do the Kemitza, if the Kohen does the Kemitza, I'm not going to be doing it. So, and in his hand either comes a pebble or some sort of mineral, or gargamelach, a grain of salt, or kar lavona, or lavona. If any of those things come into the hand of the kohen for the kmitza, possible, that's no good. Meaning the kmitza has to be exclusively flour and oil. So the lavona's on top. So what do you do? So it's very simple. It's as if I've done this. So it's very simple. You take lavona, you move it to the side. And then you do the kmitza. The comments mimakum shenes rabba shmina, and you do the kmitza from the place where there's ribui shemen. There's a lot of oil. What does that mean? It means from a place where there's a lot of oil. Okay, I don't know how thoroughly mixed the flour and the oil is, but you go to a place where there's a lot of oil. Minalan dechtiv misalta mishmana, because the Torah says that when the kohen does his kmitza, he goes to the solus and the shemen, the flour and the oil. Migirsa umishamna, from the fine flour and from the oil. So the Torah makes it a special point that you got to make sure that in the kmitza is going to be flour and oil. And so therefore, when the kohen does his kmitza, look inside the bowl, see where there is a nice concentration of flour and oil, and that's where you should do the kmitza. Then what do you do with the kometz? Is you take the kometz and you put it into another kli sharis. So this is now our second kli sharis. The first one is where we put the original mincha, and then after the kohen doing kmitza, so the kometz goes into a second bowl. To which the Gemara prompts the Gemara to ask the question, Lamali hakishachad zimna? Really? And I'm going to put it into another kli sharis? I did it already. Meaning it already has kedusha seguf. What's the point of taking the kometz and putting it into a second kli sharis? So the Gemara says, Mididahave adam. That's adam is over there, two words. The aleph is a prefix, and the dam means blood. So Mididahave adam. So the Gemara says it's because it's like blood. Meaning we made this point numerous times, but you can't say it enough. It's just the basics. And that there are four avodas when it comes to an animal, and there are four avodas when it comes to a mincha. And we want them to parallel one another. So when it comes to an animal, what do? We shech the animal. The animal has kedusha to go for, as the Gemara is about to point out. Then the blood comes, and we take the blood, and we collect the blood in a kli sharis. So basically what we're doing is, even though the animal already has kedusha seguf, we're now collecting the blood in a kli sharis. Okay? So the Gemara says it's the same thing by mincha. The kmitza is tantamount to shechting, meaning you're taking some of it away. And now what do? You put it in a kli sharis. The Gemara makes exactly this point. Let's see it inside. So the Gemara says, even though when it comes to an animal, I sanctify the animal, I did so with a knife. All right, the knife is the kli sharis used to shech the animal and imbue the animal with kedusha seguf. So, b'tzavar behema. Hada maktish le b'kli sharis, and yet we collect the blood in a bowl, which is a kli sharis. Hachanami loshna. So here also we're going to do the same thing. The kmitza is going to be taken out by the Kohen Gadol. The kmitza is being taken out by Kohen, and despite the fact that it's already been taken out by Kohen, from a kli sharis, they're going to put it into a second kli sharis. Or malakis.
Yeah, the mincha was already in a kli sharis.
Yeah.
Well, the dam was never in a kli sharis.
It wasn't something that was imbued with kedusha seguf from a kli sharis.
Right.
Okay. It's not. Obviously, we're trying to compare animals to a flower offering. It's not perfect, but at least we have now the parallels. Or malakis lavona venosna al gabab. Now what do? We collect the lavona. Meaning no one eats the lavona. Well, the mizbeach eats it, but right, none of the kohanim eat the lavona, but rather it's collected and it's placed on the kometz. And the Gemara just simply quotes a pasuk that speaks to this idea. And you bring it up in a kli sharis. Now, the way we have our Gemara, the gears of our Gemara, is that we're about to have a havamina where when the Braisa says you bring in a kli sharis, meaning you throw the kometz in the kli sharis on the Mizbeach, meaning you burn the kli sharis as well. Umaktir be kli sharis. Be kli sharis maktileng? The Gemara says, can't be. This is the gear that we have in our Gemara, where the Havamina was, we're going to burn the kli sharis, or at least attempt to. And the Gemara says, Ela ema maleo be kli sharis li haktiro. You bring the comets up in a kli sharis in order to do haktara to the comets. But we're not going to burn the kli sharis. That's the give and take of the Gemara as we have the girsa. Rashi, on the very top of Tezvav Amar Aleph, says he also had such a girsa. He finds great difficulty with his girsa. Even this Havamina is just... It can't even entertain it. Take a look at the very top of Rashi. Rashi just rejects the girsa that we have in our Gemara because v'ahachi kakashalei. So now that you don't have the girsa that we have in our Gemara, so then what's the question of the Gemara? So Rashi goes on to say, maktiros agadachav aray dain lo malcha. The question according to Rashi and Rashi's girsa is that it's still too early to do aksar. We're not ready to burn the comets because, as we're about to say, we need to salt the comets. Everything goes up on the mizbeach needs to be salted, so we need to salt it. So at this point in time, it's just premature. It's too early. So v'stefa ketanu mochav v'nasal gabi ishim ama hashto hu demakterle. So at this point in time, we can't be makterit. So that's the problem the Gemara had, according to Rashi's girsa. And the solution is, the solution basically comes out to be the same point. Ela'ema ma'aleo lehaktiro b'klisharis klomar, I'm reading the next Rashi, ma'aleo b'klisharis lehaktiro la'achashiyam achenu. Meaning, you're absolutely right. We're not going to bring it up right now. It just simply means we're bringing it up so that we can burn it on the Mizbech, but we're not going to do that yet. We're only going to do it after Malicha. Okay, that's the, I guess, if you want to make more of this, the distinction between our girsa and Rashi's girsa, maybe, again, just a suggestion, maybe they're arguing about where Malicha is done. Meaning, according to Rashi's girsa, Malicha has to be done on the top of the Mizbeach. And maybe, according to our girsa, maybe that's not so. Okay, maybe.
That could be why they're worried about a grain of salt.
Okay, could be. Yeah, I glossed over that point, but right. The havamina that there would have been salt in the comments is a little bit strange because, right, nobody would have been salting at that point in time. Okay. And then you salt the comments, and you put it on the fire of the Mizbeach. The Pasuk says, you salt every carbon, this not being an exception, not out of the rule. Krav ha-komet shiren na'chalam. Once the komet is offered, so then there's a remaining part of the mincha, and that's eaten by the kohanim. Minal dechsiv yiktira koinis as karasa, uksiv, v'anosers min ha-mincha la'arun levanav. I'm sorry, la'arun levanav. Okay, so once again, just following the psukim in Parshas Vayikra, so you see, first you offer the comets on top of the mizbech, you allow it to burn, then and only then can the kohanim eat the shirayim. Krav ha-komets la'markidisle. Now, at what point is it considered that the comets is burnt? How much burning do you need of the comets in order to create a matir? The Gemara says, "De itmar comets meinus matir shirayim ba'achila." So here the Gemara quotes emachlokus amarayim. Rabbi Chanina amar mishitish laba'or. So Rabbi Chanina says the moment that the fire starts singeing it, meaning an early stage of burning. And Rabbi Yochanan amar mishitatzis ha'or berubo. No, most of the comets has to be on fire, burnt. However, okay. Not exactly sure, but in other words, most of it has to be burnt and or lit on fire, and that's and only then can the kohanim eat the shirayim. Urishayim akonli tein l'tocho yayin v'shem dvash. And now, when the kohanim eat the shirayim, so it's just right now flour and oil. So they can add wine, oil, honey. My time amakra lamashcha legedula, because the Gemara the Torah says that it's lamashcha. The Gemara's understanding of that is legedula. It has to be eaten in the sense of royalty. Just like the kings eat it. The kings eat their food with, the Gemara doesn't say it over here, but the Gemara elsewhere says, with mustard, right? In other words, nice side dishes, not side dishes, condiments. Thank you. Nice condiments that go together with the carbon mincha. Ve'inos and ela malachamitz, and then the brisa goes on to say, and it can't become chametz. That's the only thing that you can't allow it. Can't allow it to happen. Dechsev lo se'afei chametz chalkam. So the Torah says that it can't be baked into chametz, meaning you can't allow it to become chametz. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish afilu chalkam lo se'afei chametz. Even the portion that's given over to the kohanim, the shirayim, that also cannot become chametz as well. So that's the only thing that the kohanim cannot do. But they want to add some condiments to it. That's fine. Kol hamenachos. Okay. That was one long run-on sentence. But again, the Gemara just simply gave pshat and a source in the psukim for every one of the halachas that apply to the general rules of menachos. Okay. We go back to our Mishnah, and the Mishnah made a very big comment. Our Mishnah said, it's the beginning of the second parak, it's on yesterday's daf, bottom of Yudal Amad Aleph, the Mishnah said, second line of the Mishnah, Kol HaMenachas Tu'unim Shemen Ulevona, V'zu Ein Tu'un Alo Shemen V'lovona. Every mincha, right? The Mishnah says kol. Every mincha has oil and lavona, except for the mincha v'sota. And the Gemara now is here to point out, which is simply not true. Kol ha-menachas v'chol ha-menachas to shemen v'lavona. Every mincha requires oil and lavona. V'ayika mincha schote. The Gemara says it's not true. Mincha schote. In the end of Parshas Vayikra, so there's a series of chatayim where if a person sins, so he has to bring a carbon chatas, but a carbon chatas that's flexible depending on his current economic status. If he's rich, he's going to bring what's called the carbon ashir. If he is poor, so then he brings a carbon dalos. And if he's really poor, it's dalai dalos. There are three levels of carbonis that a person can bring for these limited chatayim that are mentioned at the end of Parshas Vayikra. Rashi over here gives a list. I'm looking at Rashi, Minchas Chote, Habal Chete, Metame Mikdash, if you go into the base of Mikdash while being Tame, Shavuos Eidus, you suppress testimony, you know testimony, but you decline knowing the testimony. Ushvuos Bitu, you make a Shavuos, which comes out to be... Not Shavuot Shav. Shavuot Bitu, he says you're going to do something and you don't do it, or the opposite. You said you didn't, and meanwhile you didn't. So Shavuot Bitu, Dichsiv Hasam Im Lo Sasi Gadol Shtei Sorim. And there the Torah goes on to say, and if you don't have enough money and you can't bring the standard carbon chata, so then you can bring either a pair of birds, which is cheaper, or if you're really poor, you could bring a mincha, which is even cheaper. And to which the Gemara points out, the mincha schote, there's no oil and there's no lavona on the Minchas Chote. So, doesn't speak well to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that every Mincha has oil and Lavona, with exception to the Mincha Vesota. So the Gemara says, it's an obvious problem. So first let's go over the Pasuk in Perek Hay of Ayikra, where the Torah says, on the Mincha of the Chote, no oil and no Lavona. Okay, so we have more to the list, and meanwhile the Mishnah says only by the Mincha Vesota.
I'm
thinking about your suggestion. The Mishnah is not speaking categorically. The Mishnah is saying specifically only the Mincha Vesota. Right, the Mishnah says Vizu, meaning only this one. Okay, so hachi kamar. It's going to basically be the answer. So the Gemara says like this: Kol ha-menachas tu'un shemes v'lavona. Every mincha requires oil and lavona. Again, I'm not translating lavona because I'll say frankincense, and to me the two words are the same. So you understand? I don't. Yeah. Okay. So every mincha has shemen and lavona, has oil and lavona. Ubaos menachitim, and it comes from wheat. Ubaos solas, and it's and the flour is very fine flour. Minchas chote. Now moving along, we turn to the minchas chote. Again, the fluctuating mincha that's described at the end of Parshas Vayikra. Afa pishenetu nashem levona. Now it's true that there's no oil and there's no levona, but bas minachitim and bas solas. However, it still behaves two out of three like all other minachos, which is it comes from wheat and it's fine flour. Minchas haomer. Now another mincha, that of the Omer, second day of Pesach. Afa pishaba min ha-saorim, now comes from barley, but tu neshem levona uba geres. But it comes with oil and levona, and it also has fine flour. So it too has two out of three. Vizu, now you understand. Our Mishnah over here is not saying that every mincha has oil and levona, because it's not true. But what our Mishnah is saying is that sota is unique. Because even the other menachos that behave a little bit differently, they behave a little bit differently, right? They have two out of the three. But when it comes to the mincha of the sota, so vizu einatun alo shemen v'lo lavona. So number one is that it doesn't have oil and lavona. Uba min asarin. Number two, it comes from barley, which is unusual. And number three, uba kemech. And it's coarse flour. It's not fine flour. So it went 0 for 3. The mincha of the sota has none of the regular characteristics of a mincha, and that is what makes it unusual, and that's what our Mishnah means when the Mishnah says vizu, and this one. the exclusivity is not towards the fact that it doesn't have Shemen Lavona. There are other menachos that don't as well. But the other menachos at least mostly behave like a regular mincha. This mincha v'sota behaves nothing like a regular mincha. Tanya Rabbi Shimon, bedin hu shetehe minchas chote tun Shemen Lavona. Very interesting comment made by Rabbi Shimon, and that is, by right, the mincha v'chote should have oil and should have lavona. Should, by right. Now, obviously you know that can't be, because the Torah says it doesn't have, but he says if you reason it out, so you could have made an argument that it should. It could be, I'm just again making another suggestion, could be that Rabbi Shimon Latame, Rabbi Shimon's time is to crawl. Rabbi Shimon always seeks reasons behind the Torah. So in other words, he'll very often use reasoning to come to conclusions. But over here, he knows what the conclusion is. The Torah says you can't. But if you allow logic to pervade, we would have put it on. Why? Because the guy's a sinner. Or the girl. The guy's a sinner. And what are you going to do now? You're going to excuse him from bringing oil and lavona? Apparently they were expensive. They were, you know, big ticket items in a mincha, or the more expensive items in a mincha. And now you're basically giving him a pass on those items because it's a mincha v'chote. And yet the Torah says we don't do it. But why don't we do it? Oh, so the carbon's not a nice carbon. It's not a carbon mehudar. So in other words, counter pressure. On one hand, we don't want him to get away financially. On the other hand, we don't want the carbon to be nice. So the second argument is obviously going to be the prevailing argument. But again, without the arguments, we of course would have known what the conclusion is. He's just trying to reason it out. And now let's turn to a chatas chelev. Chatas chelev is just the Gemara's terminology for somebody who violates a standard iser kares. Right, the beginning of Masech Tekrisos, the Mishnah over there goes through all 36. 34 of them are lavim. If a person violates 34 of those of Isurim in the Torah, b'shogeg, and he does so inadvertently, so he has to bring a carbon chatas. The Gemara refers to it generally as a chatas chelev. So the why does the Gemara use the term chatas chelev to describe the standard chatas? Because typically a person would be eating a chelev inadvertently. In other words, you're shechting an animal, you're eating most of the contents of the animal. And here in America, we eat very little of the animal, but right in the good old days and in different countries, you're basically eating almost all the animal. And so it's possible, it's likely that inadvertently you're going to eat the chelev, the forbidden fats of the animal. So anyway, so by right, let's go back to the Gemara's point. By right, Rabbi Shimon says, you bring a chatas chelev, you should bring a nesachim. Meaning, generally speaking, when you bring a carbon to the base of Mikdash, right, a shlamim and ola, so they're nesachim that come along with it, right? What translates in English as libations. Okay, and accompaniments with every carbon, flour, oil, wine that is put on the mizbeach. And so it should be the same by chatas. Shlo yechote niskar. And again, why by right should it happen? It should happen because we don't want the sinner to have an advantage, a financial advantage. You're a sinner, and meanwhile, you don't have to bring the sachem. It's not right. But, once again, counter pressure. The counter pressure is that we don't want the carbon to be, quote unquote, a nice carbon. Nesachim are an accessory to a carbon, makes it nice. So the Torah doesn't want it to be nice. He's a chote. So therefore, the nesachim are left out of a standard chatas. However, both the chatas and the asham of a mitzora, they require tu'unim nesachim. They do require nesachim. Lefi shein bar nachet, because they're not coming as a result of a sin. And so now, even though by name it's called a chatas and an asham, and generally they come for a sin, so by the case of a mitzora, he's not sinning, and yet he brings it. Therefore, he brings nesachim together with both the chatas and the asham. So Gemara says, "Good." The Gemara says, "Ini v'amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman, amar Rabbi Yonasan, al shiva dvarim negayim ba'in." The Gemara here quotes the Gemara that we know from Erechin, it's in Shavuos as well, but we know from Erechin, which is, what do you mean? A person gets teras because of Lashon Hara, and oh, by the way, less popular, six other averas that also brings about teras. Gemara in Erechin obviously goes through all seven. I don't remember them off the top of my head, and I would cheat and I would look at Rashi, but Rashi says, look at the Gemara in Erechin. Okay, anyway, so what do you mean he's not a sinner? The Mitzara is a sinner. That's how he got his Saras. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara says, yes, that's true, but he did sin, and the Saras comes as a result of the sin. But you know what the Saras is? That's the Mechaper. That provides a kapara. So now, by the end of his saras, he's michupar. He's clean. So now the Torah says, now bring a chatas. Why am I bringing a chatas? Oh, because obviously the chatas of the mitzvah doesn't function as a kapara. It functions as something else. What does it function as? Gemara goes on to say, ki maisi karban li shtiri bekachemu dekamaisi. So it's only coming as a heter. It allows the mitzvah at the conclusion of his saras to be able to go back to the base of mikdash and eat karbanos. He can't eat karbanos. He's mechusar kippurim until he brings his karban. So the karban chatas and ashram the mitzvah are only there to be matir kachim. It's not there to be mechaper. What about a nazir? What did he do wrong? In other words, he should also require nesachim by his karbanos. So the Gemara says we're just off the heels of Masech the Nazir. We've seen this already a number of times in the previous Masechas. And we know a Nazir Zechote, at least according to Rabbi Lazar Kafar, a Nazir Zechote because he was Tzir Asma Minayayin. He stopped drinking wine. So not good to stop drinking wine. Don't quote me out of context. Okay. So he's abstaining from worldly pleasures. That's not the way to behave in general. Right? The Rambam made a whole philosophy out of this point of the Gemara, and so that's why he's also a chote as well. And again, so the prevailing argument is we don't want his carbon to be muhudar, and that's why there's no nesachim that come with the carbon of a nazir. Rabbi Gamliel Omer Kishem. Okay, in our Mishnah, Rabbi Gamliel at the end of our Mishnah gives a bit of a drush. And his drush is that just like her behavior was that of an animal, she's a married woman, she's having relations with another man, or at least allegedly having relations with another man, kach karbana maichel behema. That's why her karban, maichel behema, barley, animal food. Tanya, the Gemara quotes a braisa. Amar lehem Rabbi Gamliel chachamim, excuse me. Rabbi Gamliel says to the chachamim, sofrim. He refers to them as sofrim. In the context of this braisa, it's clear that he did not mean this in a praiseworthy, right? It was almost whatever. He's challenging them, and that's certainly from the context of the braisa. It sounds like this is he's being argumentative. So hanichuli va'adrashena, leave it to me, and I'll darshan kimin chomer, like a Rashi says, like a button. Right, not any button, but Rashi says, you know, the button that puts together the collar of your shirt, the top button of your shirt, kind of like a necktie, but instead of a necktie, a button. As you can see, I really love my tie. So the Va'adrashena Kimin Chomer, I'm going to explain it beautifully. Meaning, apparently, there was another explanation given in terms of why the Sota is having barley as her mincha, and Rabbi Gamliel heard that explanation. Rabbi Gamliel says, That's not a good explanation. And we'll actually see in just a moment what the other explanation is. And Rabbi Gamliel says, please leave it to me. I'm going to explain it. Now, we already know Rabbi Gamliel's explanation because we saw it back in the Mishnah. But the this braisa gives us a little more dialogue and, you know, a little more personality, so to say, in the exchange between Rabbi Gamliel and another Tana. Deshamel Rabbi Meir, because he heard Rabbi Meir say the following. Dekamar, he ha'echilas amadne olam l'fichach karbana maichel behema. So Rabbi Meir, when he explains why the sota is given barley, so he says, it's mida keneged mida. We saw this earlier in the first parak of the Masechta. She's giving him mane olam. In other words, how is she enticing this man? Not her husband. Good food. Therefore, the Torah says, yeah, you use good food to entice, so you're going to be giving animal food. That's Rabbi Meir's drasha. So Amar Lei, so Rabbi Gamliel says to Rabbi Meir, hatena chashira. So if the woman is a wealthy woman and she has the means to buy nice food, so that's good. Ania ma'ikala me'mar, but what if she's poor? So her method of enticement is not going to be madne olam. It's not going to be royal food. So how is she going to entice her man? So she's going to use other means. But in other words, your explanation of why the sota is eating barley is not going to always be true. And you need an explanation that's universal for that would apply to every sota. So elakashim shemasem, I sabahima, kach kabana, maicha behema. So Rabbi Gamliel is giving an explanation that applies to every sota. Her behavior is like a behema, and right, not it's a non-monogamous behavior, so therefore the food that she's going to eat is Michael Behema. It's going to be animal food as well. Animals do not have this monogamous type of relationship. Okay, and anyone who knows anything about the animal kingdom who wants to wants to take issue with this, so you know, afterwards, as if I knew. Just one interesting point over here in the Gemara, and that is that we have a dialogue in our Gemara between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Meir. So that's very difficult. Meaning, right, the way Gemara presents itself, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Meir are arguing. It's very very hard to imagine, right? Rabbi Gamliel, Zakein, lived during Bayis Sheni. Rabbi Gamliel, they're both leaders of the Jewish people, but the Rabbi Gamliel, who we more popularly know, in other words, that we hear about more often, so he lived. He was during Chorban Bayis Sheni. He lived during the destruction of the Second Temple. And Rabbi Meir lived after the Chorban. Rabbi Meir was a student to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Meir was a Rebbe to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. He lived after the Chorban. So it's a little bit difficult to have the two of them communicating with one another when they're just... Meaning, you go with either Rabbi Gamliel. You go with Rabbi Gamliel Zakein. He's way too early. You go to Rabbi Gamliel, the one you know that we hear about more often. So he's a little too early. Meaning he lived during the Chorban. And Rabbi Meir for sure lived after the Chorban. So it's a little bit difficult in terms of understanding how they had a conversation. It could just very simply be exactly. In other words, it could be that they're just simply opinions. Rabbi Meir is echoing an opinion that he heard from earlier. Right? That could be. All right. Hi. Okay. Could, right again. Right number. No, correct. I'm just pointing out that the way the Gemara has it, it's very difficult. Hayam mevi pilish acheres. Then we move on now in the procedure of the sota, and now we get to the water. So it was brought in a cup. A very interesting use of word that the Mishnah chooses. The Mishnah refers to it as pile. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it because, yeah. So it's a Greek word, and I know no knowledge of the language. So okay, fine. Yeah, okay. No, I see the Farsi speakers are they understand the word much better than I do. So anyway, whatever the pronunciation. A cup of water is brought to her. Okay, I'll keep it simple. I'll speak in a language that I kind of understand. I am Avi Piala Shacharis, so it's made up of earthenware, but no son lasocha chatzi log mayim. How much water is put in? So chatzi log. And mina kior. And it's taken from the kior. So again, you take a look at the picture of the base of Mikdash behind me. So in the Azara, you had a big bowl of water. It was right next to the Mizbeach, a little bit south of the entrance of the Ulam of the Mizbeach. I'm sorry, of the base of Mikdash. Huh?
You have a brown right there.
So that's the kiyor. So the water was taken from the kiyor. Now the kiyor, generally speaking, was used for the kohanim to wash their hands and feet, right? That was the basic purpose of the kiyor. The kohanim, every time they wake up in the morning and they do the avodah, so they go to the kiyor and they wash their hands and feet from the kiyor. So you had water accessible right in the azara. Okay, so according to the Tanakam of our Mishnah, so that's where you get the water from. You take it from the kiyor. How much do you take? So according to the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, you take chatzi log. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Revias. And Rabbi Yehuda says a quarter of a log, which is half of a half. So Rabbi Yehuda's shear is a smaller shear. And the Mishnah goes on to explain why. Kishem shememai biksav, kach memayit bemayim. So we don't know this yet, but we're going to see later in the Masechta that there's going to be a debate of how much of the parsha is written down on the cloth. Meaning we're going to take part of the parsha of Sota, we're writing it down on the cloth, and we're putting that cloth into water. How much of the parsha did we write? So that's a machlokas. And we're going to see that machlokas later on. But right now, all we need to know, to understand this Mishnah, to appreciate it, is that Rav Yehuda is a minimalist. he has, in terms of opinions, the smallest amount of parsha that needs to be written on the cloth. And so therefore, the water that's used, where the parsha is going to be put into, which ultimately is going to erase the letters on the cloth, is also going to be a smaller shear. The shear of water is going to match the small amount of ksav that actually is going to be written and put and placed in. Nichnas la'echel ofanu le'imino. Now, the Mishnah goes on to describe how now, with a cup of water in hand, the Kohen is going to go into the Heichal, and when he goes into the Heichal, he's going to make a right-hand turn. Umakam ayosham amal ama. And they had a stone floor in the Beis HaMikdash, right? Yeah. In other words, I would assume that he got the water from the Kiyor, and he goes in. What's unclear to me, I would assume this is the Ulam, and then this is the Heichal. It's unclear to me whether the right-hand turn is in the Ulam or it's in the Heichal. Sounds like, and the picture over here certainly indicates, because it says so in the picture, that the Heichal over here means, literally, he goes past the Ulam, through the entrance, and actually into the Heichal itself, makes a right-hand turn, and in the right-hand corner, and this would be now the northeast corner of the Heichal. I had to flip the whole thing in my head. In the northeast corner of the Heichal, so you would have that that marble square. The Tabla Shayish. And now what the Kohen would do is, Nechnas Lehechel Ofanu Limino, Makam Hayasham, Amma La'amma. It was one Amma by one Amma, the Tabla Shayish. And it was a marble stone. So I guess it looked different than the regular floor sequence of the Heichal. V'tabasai Sakvuaba. Now there was a ring attached to this, to the square marble. And Kishu Magbia. So now you do what you do is you take your hand on the ring and you literally pick up the floor. V'notel Afra Mitachtaha. And now, wasn't plastered. In other words, so the stone was sitting on top of earth. So what you do is you pick up that stone and you take a little bit of earth from underneath. V'nosin kedeshira al hamayim. How much dirt do you put into the water? Enough where it's noticeable, says the Mishnah. Shenamar, the pasuk says, "Minafar sheyeba karka mishkan," and from the earth, from the dirt that was on the floor of the mishkan, yikacha kohen v'nosan el hamayim. Okay, and this is a clear fulfillment of the pasuk in terms of where the earth is taken from and placed into the water. Tana, Pilot Shocheres Chadash Shadiv Rabbi Shmuel. According to Rabbi Shmuel, this cup has to be earthenware, but new. Totally new cup. Now, our Mishnah doesn't say that, and ostensibly our Mishnah disagrees with that point. Our Mishnah does not require that to be a new cup. Our Mishnah just simply says it's earthenware. That's all. And it could have been used before. But according to Rabbi Shmuel of the Braisa, it has to be new. My time to Rabbi Shmuel, and why? How do you arrive at that conclusion? Gamar kli kli mimetzara. So he learns it out through Gzeira Shava. Mala halan cheres chadasha afkan cheres chadasha. Just like by the mitzara. In the first procedure of the mitzara, there's a cup of water that's taken. So there, the kli cheres that's used is new. Here too, it has to be new. Prompts the next question of the Gemara. The hasa minalan. And how do I know that there? It has to be new. El kli cheres amayim chayim, because one of the birds, it's a pair of birds that are brought. One of them is going to be shechted, the other one is going to be let go. This is the first day of the taharas hamitzora. It's a 7-day process. On day one, you go through the sequence of the pair of birds. So the kli cheres is taken. And over mayim chayim, spring water. So ma mayim chayim shelo nasa ba malacha, af kli shelo nasa bo malacha. Just like the mayim chayim is pure, never been handled before, never been worked with before, so too the kli cheres that's used in conjunction with the water also happens to be something which is his first time use. And so now follow the train. The mayim chayim is quote unquote new. The kli cheres used with the mayim chayim for the mitzvah also never been used, has to be new. Gzera Shava connects kli and kli to the sota. So Rabbi Shmuel says the sota's kli cheres also has to have been first time use. Ima lahala mayim chayim afkan mayim chayim. So the Gemara says if this is the connection, so then I would also argue that according to Rabbi Shmuel, the water from the kiyor is not going to be acceptable. It has to be water coming from natural spring source. The Gemara's answer, La Rabbi Shmuel, hachinami. According to Rabbi Shmuel, that is correct. So you see now in the Braisa that according to Rabbi Shmuel, it's mayan, it's spring water. And the Chachamim say, no, doesn't have to come from spring water, can come from any body of water. Okay. So,
yeah,
so right, according to Rabbi Shmuel, yeah, it's going to be a little laborious, meaning you're going to have to now go down and find a natural spring water.
How does he do that by getting three comments for it? Do you from the Kior?
He disagrees with our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says it comes from the Kior, and Rabbi Shmuel would disagree.
What's the source for the...
Okay, I don't know. I mean, no, that's not true. That part comes from the Gzeir Shava, which connects so to the Mitzorah. And by Mitzorah, it has to be Mayim Chaim, it has to be spring water, so by Sota as well. Because
it was for natural water too. Going down and then coming out, right?
Yeah, but it was placed into an actual container. My guess is that Rabbi Shmuel would not be good enough. It has to come directly from the natural source. Now, Igal Amirfach. Now, the Gemara says, now I will challenge. We're gonna push Rabbi Shmuel a little bit on this point. Malam Mitzorah Shekain Taron Eitz Erez VeEzov Vishnis Olas. Now, go to the Mitzorah and you'll find over there that the Kli Cheres and the natural spring water is only part of what's used. You also have various cedar wood, hyssop, shnis olas, a piece of wool. There are other things that are included by the Mitzorah. Why don't you have, according to Rabbi Shmuel, why aren't they also part of the Sota procedure as well? If we're creating a Gzeir Shava. Amar Rabba, Amar Krabi, Kli Cheres, Kli Shamarti Lecha, Kvar. So Rava says, okay, and I think this is what Rava means. Rashi says it. I'm going to say it like Rashi. Hopefully what I'm saying is Rashi. But I think basically it goes like this. What Rav is saying is we're abandoning the Gzeir Shava. It's not a Gzeir Shava. It's that when the Torah says by the Sota to use a Kli that's precedented. It's almost like a Memafsinu. It's like a Binyanav. Meaning, we also have another Kli in the Torah. By the Mitzorah. The Mitzorah also has a Kli Cheres. And we know over there by the Mitzorah, so there the Kli Cheres has to be a new Kli Cheres, and we know that because the water is a Kli Cheres. When the Torah says by a Sota that you have to use a Kli Cheres, it's not a Gzeir Shava that's connecting the two. All the Torah is simply saying is, you know elsewhere I told you you need a Kli Cheres? Here you have to use that kind of Kli Cheres as well. Same kind of Kli Cheres. Once you say that, so it's not, and it's no longer Gzeir Shava, so now you don't need the Eitz Erez, you don't need the Shnit Olas, you don't need the Ezov, meaning the Torah's only requirement is use the Kli Cheres like I told you elsewhere in Chumash. Okay. Amar Rava. Rashi points out that this statement to Rava is going back to the opinion of our Mishnah. Meaning, our Mishnah does not require a new Kli Cheres. Our Mishnah is fine if it's an old Kli Cheres, one that was used before. Rav is going to teach us that even according to the Ar Chachamim of our Mishnah, it can't be really old. Okay, what do we mean by that? Let's see inside. Amar Rav lo shanu elo shelo nisakmu panav. Aval nisakmu panav psulim. If the Kli Cheres has been used so many times where it's now black, so even the Chachamim of our Mishnah, who don't require new, but this is already now too old. If it's black, and my time of doing the mayim, my mayim shalom nishtanu, af kli shalom nishtanu, because the water is there was no shinu in the water. The water looks like water, so the kli cheres has to look like a kli cheres and not blacken. By Rava, the Gemara asks a question. This is like a classic Gemara question. Nisakmu ve'echzirim l'toch kivshan eshv nislav numahu. Let's say the kli cheres was blackened, and then now at this point in time it's pasul. And then what happens is you put it back into the kiln, you fire it up again, and you get it back to new. Mi amrina kevin de'itche itche, odim kevin de'hador hador. So can we revive? Can we resuscitate the kli cheres? So the Gemara says Tashma. The Gemara says, come in here, Rabbi Lazar Omer, et eres ve'ezov v'shni talas shehiv shil behem kupaso la'chorav psulim. So the Gemara over here quotes a Mishnah, and the Mishnah teaches us the following. We learned just a couple of minutes ago that the Mitzorah, for his procedure for the first day of his purification, needs, in addition to Kli Cheres and Mayim Chaim, also needs the three ingredients of the cedar wood, the hyssop, and the piece of wool. The Mishnah teaches us that if the Eitz Erez and the Ezov and the Shnit Olas were hifshil bahen kupaso. Basically, what happened was the Kohen took it and put it in his backpack. and got to where he needed to get to, and took it out of his backpack. And you know, when you shove your paperwork into your backpack, so it's crumpled and it doesn't look good. And here the Mishnah describes where basically the hyssop is crumpled and it doesn't look good. So it is pasul, no good. The Mishnah teaches us. Now the Gemara says, now there, can't I resuscitate it? You know, like you take the paper out, it's all crinkled, and you flatten it, and it's like new, right? So which the Gemara is, and if that's true, isn't that going to answer Rav's question? Where, if I can put it back into shape again, isn't that good? And the Mishnah says, it's not. So over here, the conclusion would also be, it's not. But the Gemara's answer, Hasam de Iklof, Iklupe. So Gemara's answer is no. It's not the same. In other words, once that azov is bent, you can't bring it back to its original position. Okay, it's irreversible. Masha Enkin, when it comes to the klicheres, so even if it got blackened, if I put it back in the oven, it's like new again. The Gemara certainly sounds like it's addressing the question of nira v'nidche v'nira, something which was fit, it was disqualified, and it was fit again. Tosus is bothered because the Gemara in the third parak of Sukkah basically has the same discussion, and there doesn't seem to be awareness of our Gemara, of the Gemara in Sukkah, which also brings about the same discussion. See, it's the Tosus Divra Maskel Nisakmu, where Tosus is bothered. Why doesn't the Gemara have awareness of one another? Maybe there's a difference between the two issues. We'll do just one more bit of Gemara. Nichnas Lehechol Panali Yimino. When the Kohen goes into the Eichel, he's going to make a right-hand turn. Now, I will say he'll make a right-hand turn because that's where he needs to go. But the Gemara says it more halachically. My time, the Amar Mar, Kol Pino Shat Apone, Elo Yehei Elo Derech Yemin. So the Gemara says, no, we put it there because we want the Kohen to make a right-hand turn. Because in general, whenever you turn, you should make a right-hand turn. Right? Classically, the Gemara makes this comment when in terms of going to the top of the Mizbeach. So you go to the top of the Mizbeach, the Kohen goes to the top of the Mizbeach. So the first turn is going to make a right-hand turn. It's then going to require four left-hand turns afterwards. But in other words, that first turn always has to be a right-hand turn. So here also, the tavla is on the northeast corner of the heichal so that the Kohen will make a right-hand turn. Because generally speaking, that's what we want. We want a right-hand turn. Okay, Adkan, we stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up from the bottom of the Amud. We continue.